As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carrboro and Chapel Hill. Welcome to Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. And now, bringing back the art of the spoken word through narratives and poetry, the Richard Burton of the Triangle, the Richard Harris of Carrboro, the artist of whom reviewer Alan R. Hall has said his writings and performances are a true tribute to the written and spoken word. Our own Renaissance man, storyteller, narrator, author, classical poet, actor, adventurer, photographer, visual artist, gourmet chef, entertainer, and show host, the Bard of WCOM, host of Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, here's Claudio.
Good morning. Wow, what an introduction. Anything to avoid a job, that's the whole idea.
That's people what I'm
think
trying
I
to
have
do
no is, focus.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid work.
that was the whole premise.
Yes.
Hello, outside world. Just want to acknowledge our sponsors. Once again, we have actually now a Golden Voices sponsor. The Carolina Theatre has stepped up and become an even bigger sponsor. Thank you. There is the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival coming up over there that you folks want to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. And just want to say a big thanks. Also, John Demers of Studio in the Woods, Inc. is still very much a support. And I guess I need to get up with him about supporting us some more.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we want him to keep supporting us.
That's it. Yes, sure, yes. John, it's time again. Got a special treat for everybody. Excuse me.
Oh, Claudio's adjusting his headphones again. In case
1, 2, 1, 2. That's much better.
In case you didn't see that, audience.
Felt like I had a cold in my head, like the sound was muffled.
We don't have the webcam up yet, but it won't be long.
We've taken out the cotton wool.
We're going to have a webcam.
Anyway, we've got a very special guest here. Not that anyone else isn't special, but this guy is particularly special because I just recently went to a show he directed that blew me away, and we have David Henderson in the studio with us. You might want to get right up on that. Can we pick him up a little, John Paul? Try it again.
Now I hear myself. Okay, great. Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, the cotton wool thing, too. So anyway, we got him coming up very shortly. He works a lot with Ira David Wood at Theatre in the Park, and he put on a show, directed a show, that really impressed me with his abilities. It was basically what I would refer to as a comedy farce called Charlie's Aunt. Mm-hmm. That just absolutely... Normally, I stay away from those kinds of farces, unless they're British, of course. And he just pulled this one off with flying colour. But we're going to get right back to that. I want to start out with a little theatrical logic for anyone out there that's a techie or anyone that is not and would like to understand that world to some degree. These are terms you would be dealing with if you were a technician putting on shows, building sets, and so on. This is theatrical logic. In is down, and down is front. Out is up, and up is back. On is in, and off is out. And, of course, left is right, and right is left. A drop shouldn't, and a block and fall does neither. A prop doesn't, and a cove has no water. Tripping is okay. A running crew rarely gets anywhere. A purchase line will buy you nothing. A trap will not catch anything. A gridiron has nothing to do with football. A strike is work. In fact, a lot of work. And a green room, thank God, usually isn't. Now that you are fully versed in theatrical terms, break a leg. But not really. Now, if you really want to add to this confusion, become a sailor and go aft and fore and port and starboard, and it'll have you all doing backflips on a hard surface in a straitjacket. I know, I've been there, and I've seen how you look. Ta-da!
Yeah, get out your Google page, everybody, to try to figure out all that stuff.
It's like learning another language. I remember when I was first at sea.
It's familiar to people who are in the theater, but anybody else doesn't know.
Yeah, it's Chinese.
What the heck we're talking about? It's all inside jokes. It was very good, though.
Yeah, it is.
But nobody ever talks about techie Excellent. Stuff, and they really deserve more recognition. Those behind the scene guys. Exactly. Sometimes I think what goes on behind the scenes before a show is up and running is more interesting than the show itself.
It's some of the stuff you go through. It certainly is really interesting what goes on.
And talk about finding characters. You find them in the crew.
Hey, Tom, I mean, it's ready for a soap opera. It's ready for a TV reality
show.
They're
the ones that, I mean, they make it run.
That's it, exactly.
They really do. They
Absolutely.
Really do.
And here's something I just want to mention on behalf of Jackie Halvey, who's also one of our DJs here on the station. The Carbro Film Festival is going to be looking for submissions. I think the film festival is going to be on from November 22nd through the 27th. With Carbro, and you can find that information at carbrofilmfestival.com. Hope I'm getting all this right. The film should be less than 20 minutes. I think $10 is an early submission fee, but it looks like it's all very reasonable. And again, that's coming up from November 22nd through the 27th. So bring your indie films so that Carbro can see what you're up to. Again, did that on behalf of Jackie Halvey here at the station. And that is the carbrofilmfestival.com. That's the website. Is there anything else we need to catch up on there, John Paul? Oh, tell us about who's calling in.
Well, we are going to have Lauren Lorenz de Haas from the Triangle Youth Ballet call in about their show that they're putting on with Merge Records. It's called Merge with Motion. And we have a poster right here. You want to describe the poster, or you want me to?
I'm going to let you
just hold the mic. Hold it up in front of the microphone.
There we go. Yeah, let them see it. Exactly. There we go. Okay. I'll let you take that.
It's a dance performance in a rock music setting, with live music by Rosebuds and choreography to Spaceheads, Spoon, Polvo, Arcade Fire, Richard Buckner, Caribou, Destroyer, and the Magnetic Fields. Guest artists are the Nutheads, Pamela Pietro, E-Rock, Huff. Okay, Amanda Miller, Susan Honer, North Carolina Youth Tap Ensemble with Gene Medler, the wonderful guy and a fabulous
whom group. We hope to have on here soon. If you're listening, Gene,
indeed, Sidelog Dance Company and the dancers from the Triangle Youth Ballet, sponsored by Merge Records, 20th anniversary event made possible in part by a grant from the Fletcher Fund for the Performing Arts.
Oh boy.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Well done.
And I think Lauren is going to be calling in by 10:10.
Yes, and Lauren's always fun to talk to.
And she's going to give us a quick sketch on all that, and then we're going to go to all things David Henderson. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go switch over to David now.
Oh, no.
We're on David now. Watch out.
We can do it before the phone rings, and you'll have to pardon the interruptus.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
So welcome on the Speakeasy, David Henderson.
Hi. It's good to be here.
I've got to tell you that I've known you as an actor and a director and so on, and I've never actually come to any of the productions that you've directed.
Mm-hmm.
But when Alan Hall invited me to join him in seeing your Charlie's Aunt, I was absolutely blown away. I was laughing out loud.
Yeah, it is a wonderful show, and one of the things we were blessed is to have a great cast. Now, it was an interesting rehearsal period because of Romeo and Juliet, the show that came
right, in
it.
Which Evan Rachel Wood was in.
Exactly. We were doing that, and we extended it. So we abbreviated the rehearsal period for Charlie's Aunt by about a week.
Well, you must have cracked the whip pretty well, because that was choreography at its best.
Yeah, we did, but it's a tribute to them.
Oh, no doubt,
no
doubt.
I let them play, and my job was to not get in their way, to help them find it, not get in their way, and support them and make them have fun. The bottom line was, I said, look, if we laugh and if the audience laughs early, we win.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I believe we did. I think the first shtick had them.
Yeah, I think that for us, my whole thing was laughter builds. You know, you get a little laugh here, and it starts to build. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the show, people are happy. They leave the theater. And it's a family-friendly show, which is not something
even though it's very
do.
Suggestive, I would say
Exactly. I mean, we got letters. The theater got letters afterwards, you know, people thanking them for doing a show that they could bring their kids to and everything. And I think there's a place for that kind of theater out there, even though I don't typically do it. I typically do shows that my mother won't come see.
A little more risque, yes.
You know, but we had a good time. And Theater in the Park was wonderful. They're a great support for the show as well. We had great designers. And
you had the place sold out.
Yes, we were very, very fortunate to do that. But I had you talk about crew. I had an amazing crew for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Our stage manager is Chrissy Rapp is tremendous, and she ran that show like clockwork. And Steve Larson and Sean, his wife, she did the costumes, he did the set. And our running crew, everybody helped make that show, because you saw it. I mean, it wasn't small. It wasn't
simple. No, it wasn't small by any means.
And all of the costumes were built. All the women's costumes were all built from the ground up. They were not pulled from stock or anything. So,
and I can actually see why it was also tight as well, because the timing was, it was essential that the things just move along.
We fought that. It's written as three acts, and I immediately said, "There's no way I'm taking two intermissions.
Yeah.
I don't want to give audiences a chance." I mean, we go to see movies and we'll sit for 2.5 hours in the theater and not think about it.
Right.
But when we go to the theater, if you're in a dark room in the theater for an hour and 10 minutes, and then you go back out, and then you come back in, and you're there for another hour and 10, and you come back out, you just go, oh.
I think we're getting a phone call.
Oh, we're getting a call.
And I think we are. We'll get right back to this.
We'll take an intermission.
Hello, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else.
And who is this?
This is Lauren Lorenzhaus from the Triangle East LA. How are you today?
Hello, Lauren. Doing wonderful. Looking forward to this news about what's coming up.
I am excited, and thank you for letting me call in on your show on
Absolute
such short
pleasure.
Notice. The Triangle Youth Ballet is helping Merge Records, which, you know, I think everybody in the whole area knows that they are celebrating their 20th anniversary right now, and it's just so fabulous. And
fantastic.
We are kicking it off with a concert, a dance concert at the Carolina Theater this Saturday night before the big events begin at the Cat's Cradle. And the Rosebuds are playing live, and we've got all these great guest choreographers and dancers coming in from all over. And,
incredible.
And it's really a wonderful event.
If I can make it, I'll be there.
Oh, I hope you can. I hope you can. We've got a couple of the faculty members from ADF are performing, and we've got a company from a Sidelong Dance Company from Winston-Salem's coming over, and some local folk who are coming from, who now live far away, are coming back in the area to perform as well. So it's
and you've got Gene Medler in the picture.
Gene Medler is there with a representation from the North Carolina Youth Tap Ensemble with choreography
fantastic.
By Elizabeth Burke, which we're real excited about. And
he's supposed to come on my radio show sometime soon. I got to figure out when to lasso him in.
Oh, well, lasso away. Maybe you can catch him this Saturday night at the Carolina Theater.
I'll see if I can twist his arm, right.
So
how have you been?
I've been well. It's been a busy and full summer getting ready for this concert, and I can't believe that it's less than a month that we start thinking about Nutcracker again.
Yeah, goodness, I know. And that'll be at the Carolina as well, won't it?
It will be. It'll be both in Chapel Hill at Haynes Theater and at the Carolina Theater in Durham.
In Durham. Fantastic.
But before that, we have a production of Dracula coming up as well. So.
Aha. Where's that going to be?
That'll also be at the Carolina Theater the end of October, October 24th. We're excited about that.
Fantastic. And how many nights will that run?
Dracula will just be that one Saturday night, October the 24th.
So all you vampires, that's the night.
Well, yes, we've just, yeah, and then we have to get him back into the vault, but...
Yes. And keep him there, let him get dusty.
All right, Lauren, is there a website for people to go get more information about the Merge with Motion?
Well, there's info on lots of websites. There's info at our website, triangleyouthballet.org. There's info on Merge Records' website. There's info at the Carolina Theater's website, plus you can actually purchase the tickets online off their website.
Well, they should be quite familiar with the Carolina Theater's website because they're one of our primary, they are our primary sponsor here, the one that spends the most money supporting this show, and then we have a few others.
I'm sure you can go to the Carolina Theater website as well.
And the tickets are a little bit cheaper if you get them in advance. They're 21 day of the show. They're 17 and 15 before the show. So... I know it's hard to get some rock and rollers motivated to do something like 3 days in advance, but
come on, guys, get out there and save some money. Buy tickets early, man. Why? What do you mean?
I'm talking to a rock and roller now.
That's right. An old cotton head. Well, at some point, we got to figure out time to have you coming back on, because it sounds like we can make a show out of all this information. So
we have a busy year coming up, that is for sure.
So. Good. So let's communicate by email and see when we might book you back on the show here.
Okay. Thank you so much, Claudia.
Thanks for calling in, Lauren.
Thanks, John Paul.
You're welcome.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was a nice diversion.
That was, actually. And that was the Triangle Youth Ballet. Lauren, say her last name.
Lorenz de Haas.
Anyway, thank you for calling in, and we're going back to David Henderson.
Hi.
And do you remember where we were?
Yeah, we were talking about the intermissions or whatever. The show's written.
And we just had one.
Yeah, we did.
Ta-da.
And I appreciate I needed that to gather my thoughts. It was interesting because the show is, I think it was written in 1894, and it was written with three acts, two intermissions.
And the show he's referring to is Charlie's Aunt. Well, who's the author?
Brandon Thomas.
Brandon Thomas.
Brandon Thomas. I think it's the only thing he ever wrote.
It's a winner.
It's 200 and some pages long. And I told the cast we were only going to take one intermission and that the first act had to be an hour and 15 minutes. I didn't care how we did that, but it had to be an hour and 15.
For the beauty of that was you didn't notice it.
And that was that. That's the other thing I told him. I said, if it's an hour 15, we're great, especially if it moves and the audience goes, wow, that hour and 15 flew by.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to an hour and 15 where the audience goes, oh my God, we've been here for 2 hours.
Yes.
Because the second act was only 28 minutes.
And that is so frequently the case with shows that move too slowly.
And I said, go. And they didn't, they at first were reluctant. But it's a lot. There are a lot of lines. There's a lot of bits. There's a lot of choreography, if you will, and until they could get those scripts out of their hands and really commit to it, they didn't see where the show was going. Well, all of a sudden, they got it.
Yeah. You know, now, David, before we go on with this, I want our audience out there to know a little more about you.
Okay.
Just give us some of your background, and then we'll pick up where we just left off.
Validate yourself. Validate myself. I graduated from UNC in 92 with a degree in English and Performance Studies. I've been a professional actor since I was 5 years old. Acted all around. Do a lot of work with Burning Coal Theater Company in Raleigh. I'm on there. And you know Jerry.
Funny you should say, talk about it. I was just having a flash. 5 years old, the Beaver. He is coming on my show sometime during the Apex Film Festival.
Jerry Mathers?
Jerry Mathers.
No, he's not.
Yes, yeah, he is.
Oh, I might stalk him.
Yes, you can come on. You can come on, be part of it.
I'm obsessed with Leave It to Beaver. But I graduated from Carolina and then started acting. Lived in New York, worked for a production company in New York. Came back to North Carolina. Taught elementary school, believe it or not, for several years. Moved to L.A. when I made a film, which never got released. But
what was this film?
It was 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Adventure Continues.
Hey! Yo, Jules!
I always like being in a sequel, especially one that's
a
never
sequel.
Released. Yeah.
Yes.
And but since I've come back, I've spent a lot of time with Burning Coal Theater Company,
mm-hmm.
Theater in the Park, and Raleigh Ensemble Players. My wife is also an actor, an amazing actor at that, and we try to juggle who's doing what when.
I can imagine it'd be quite challenging at times.
It is. She just finished a one-woman show for the Theater for the American South.
We should have her on sometime.
You would have loved the show she did. It was a one-woman show on Zelda Fitzgerald.
Oh,
and
God.
Fitzgerald
is one of my favorite writers.
I know I'm biased, but I forgot I was watching my wife.
That's incredible.
Such an amazing performance.
I wish I had known that was even happening.
Yeah, it was in Wilson. It's a professional summer event, and they do two shows typically in rep, and they rehearsed it in Raleigh. The director, Mark Fager, came up from Miami for the show. They rehearsed for a month before they actually began rehearsing, if you will. Her script was footnoted to almost every word, and her
goodness.
Performance indicated it. I mean, she was...
How long was the show?
The show was... It's a two-hour piece, ran for 3 weeks.
Wow.
Fantastic. And so we juggle back and forth, but I love it, so I always find my way back in. And I'm primarily an actor. I prefer being on stage. Mm-hmm. Than directing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I wouldn't have known that by the last show.
Well, if you'd have seen some of the rehearsals...
You got your chance to ham it up there.
You would have seen me go, oh, yes, I know now why I don't direct as much. But it is a challenge to direct because you've got so much on your plate. You're working with all of the designers because when theater works, it's truly a collaborative art form.
Mm-hmm.
What I bring to the table as a director or even as an actor has to mesh with what you might bring as a designer or whatever.
Sure.
And finding that balance is sometimes hard. I've been a director on shows where no one was communicating, so the final product is indicative of that. And then I've worked on shows where it was ease.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened, and you go, wow, theater really is magical.
Oh, when it's there, there's nothing like it.
No, not at all. And Charlie's Aunt, when it opened, the day before, three or four days before it opened, I looked at the cast and I said, I don't have any more words. I don't know what to say. We need to take it to the next level. And I've given you everything that I know to give you right now.
Now find it in yourselves.
And they did. Yeah, and they did.
They definitely did.
And it took the audience.
It was dynamic.
That last element of theater that people always forget is the audience. I mean, they don't forget it, but I think you need it. You need that energy coming back. Because
makes so much difference.
Rehearsing a farce in a vacuum is brutal.
Oh, it's got to be. I know.
Oh. It's not fun. It's not fun for the actors. It's not fun for the director.
Because you're getting no feedback.
No, and I can only laugh so much.
I guess the feedback is from the other actors, if you're getting any.
And it was tough. It was tough, we reached the point where they got some laughter, and they realized, oh, this is funny.
Now, I want to interject for a moment. Mm-hmm. The way David Henderson and I met is a year ago or almost a couple of years, a year and a half ago anyway.
Yeah.
When I went to interview Ira David Wood at Theatre in the Park while he was still directing that year's Christmas Carol. And, of course, you were...
Jacob Marley.
So David, what he did is he sat down with me for about 20 minutes, and then he had all the other actors come and be interviewed by me. And we did a two-hour special that day, New Year's Day. And that was how you and I connected. I'm trying to remember. Oh, and I've since then, actually, just a little news clip here. Managed to convince Ira David Wood. I've been wanting somebody to, at some point, interview me so that I can have an archive that people can go to find out more about all these things I do, so you don't just think of me as somebody that just can't be focused if he does all those things. And Ira David Wood has agreed, I think sometime, probably in the span of a month or more, he's coming into the studio here, this dive, and going to do an interview of my background. So I'm very honored that he agreed to that.
Great.
Thanks, Ira. Back to you.
Oh. Back to me.
Oh, he did. I got him.
Back to what?
Yeah, I mean,
where were we?
David. What? No.
If you want to, you can go right back to where I left off before you introduced yourself.
No, I think meeting. I'll have to go back to meeting you. I really want to get into this whole Richard Harris of Carrboro thing.
That was John Paul's notion.
I would like to be a part of that for some reason. That's one of the things of theater that is wonderful is the characters.
We actually want to start doing some radio theater, and we'll eventually. I'm going to write some scripts.
Oh, good.
And I was already thinking about drawing you into that. Twist is another one that was interesting.
Yeah, it'd be.
We're also going to start doing some recitation and
some skits
music.
Live with his backup.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Not just skits, but actual
performances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Performance of pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that the characters that you meet in theater are amazing, and Richard Harris and Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton, even that era of actor. It's so different now.
Almost doesn't exist anymore. The closest thing we have is Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah,
I mean, he's by himself.
Yeah, he is the last of that breed. But I just David always tells us, you know, some great Richard Harris and Peter O'Toole stories.
Oh God,
the ones of them drinking during a show, like leaving the theater, going to a bar,
coming back.
Well, you remember that the take that. Laurence Olivier did in That's Entertainment.
Yes.
There was a big dance scene, throwing the arms out to either side and dancing with about 20 other people. And there was this one thing, and the director actually approached him after the particular piece, where he incorporated just sort of a flick of the wrist into the dance move that the choreographer had not suggested but decided he liked. Mm-hmm. After all, it's Laurence Olivier, but it actually worked for the scene. He said, where did that idea come from? He goes, I just needed to take a look at my watch to see when was pub time. he wanted to know how much longer he had to do this.
And the sad thing is, most of the theaters that I perform in aren't like next door to a pub. I mean? It's like theater in the park. Really. I'd have to walk across, halfway down a block to get a beer. Yeah. It's a beautiful experience to be in a show and meet the people that I get to meet, and you know, meeting you backstage at Christmas Carol was great. It was a nice, all of a sudden, oh, here's this person I've never met who's fascinating. We can talk about a lot of things, and it's a friendship that has built and can continue to grow.
Absolutely,
and that's what theater is for me.
It is a great launching point for things because I've made a lifetime friendship with Michael Rickenbacker, and we met on the set of Three Penny Opera, and the Three Penny Opera came into my life because I did Seafarers, and I told while doing that, while renting the stage from Ira David Wood, I said, look, if there's ever anything I can be in that you're putting on, I really need more seasoning in this. I've just sort of got thrown on stage. Please consider me for an audition. And weeks later, I get this phone call from him, Claudio. I'm directing Three Penny Opera, and your audition was Seafarers. You're cast. Come on. So... And it became a lifetime friendship with several people there.
And that's having started doing this since when I was 5 years old. I've met so many people, and truly, they're a large part of my life. I mean, I grew up telling stories. I mean, you know, Seafarers is telling stories.
Absolutely.
And that's what theater is to me, is telling a story. And I would tell my cast in Charlie's Aunt, and I would tell. As an actor, my job is to tell this story.
Absolutely.
I honor the words that the playwright has written, but my job is to tell the story, and that's it.
You're essentially the paintbrush.
I am. And at the end of the show, if I've done my job right, whether it be as a director or as an actor, hopefully people have laughed, cried, thought about the world a little differently, thought about their own lives a little differently, spent 2 hours in the dark, and are moved when they leave the space. I always say theater can change the world. Now, granted, it may shift it only a little bit. Is, you know, if I do a show and you only lean to the left about 2 inches, your view of the world is different at mm-hmm. the end of the show, you know?
Very true.
And that's my job as an artist. My
to give,
job
to basically gain a different perspective.
Exactly.
Pardon me, I was just... thought there was a note I was supposed to express on here, but I don't think I brought it with me. Want to mention that you are listening to Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, here in the studio with my co-host, John Paul. And we just had Leo walk in.
Yes,
master Leo. Of what happens here.
Yeah.
No problem. Where was I going? Oh, Carolina Theatre. You will also hear Carolina Theatre now advertised throughout the day on Simeon, as they are now one of our Golden Voices sponsors. And also acknowledging Studio in the Woods.
By Simeon, Claudio means the automated system here at WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carborough.
Yes, we did a voiceover that plays throughout the day.
That's right.
That's part of the Golden Voices deal, so there's continued advertising. And again, they've got the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival coming up. Obviously, they have this thing coming up on Saturday.
You're talking about the thing with Triangle Youth Ballet?
With Laurent, yeah.
Yes, and Merge Records. Doing a 20-year celebration.
Which they didn't even tell me about, so I've got to go sneak in on that one. But anyway, and that's pretty much what they need to know from me, so we're back to you.
Oh, good.
I wanted to segue into the fact that I am trying to twist your arm into directing me in Seafarers and looking at about maybe a year from now staging it, or mm-hmm. sooner if venues open up for it. I have no idea if you... I'm thinking Theatre in the Park because Ira David Wood wants me to bring it back. It's where I launched it. I don't know that if you have other spaces in mind. I'm going to leave that up to you. If I bring you in as the director, it's going to be your ball game.
Oh, no. I don't. I really don't like to direct. You know?
Well, actually, I want you to join me in it. I don't see any reason that we can't do that. More than one person can't recite and perform.
Well, and I think, again, it's telling stories, and that's the appealing thing to me, is when I read something or hear something, I like to take a journey.
Absolutely.
I like to be transported, if you will.
And it's about, God, I would say it's about almost 35 different stories coming at you poetically, because the seed, you know, the sea is a movement.
Yeah, and for me, as I was listening to it, I'm filling in the story. You know what I mean?
Good.
My brain is creating the through line between the pieces. And as a director, I'm trying to figure out how that through line translates onto stage. Or whatever. And it's just like with Charlie's Aunt or with any other show as an actor that I do, I have to create the through line, the overarching goal, objective of the play is important for me to know and put together and piece together.
Absolutely.
I always say that if you look at my scripts as an actor, you won't be able to see the words on the page for all of the notes and the writing and the thoughts and the things that I put in there.
But you know what they are.
Yeah, that I do, my homework that I do. And the same thing as a director. I mean, when you are given a piece like Seafarers or a script that nobody's ever done before, if you will, something that's not out there in the common canon of theater, mm-hmm. you sit down and you start going, okay, what works here? And you just destroy it, basically, with ink. Making notes and visual images and post-it notes and things like that. And that's where I, you know, as we move forward with this, that's the next step, is to sit down and tear it apart, if you will, for myself, to go, where are the beats, where are the shifts, where are all this stuff?
Absolutely. And I really think that when we do it, and I think you and I are already on the same page, I really like the idea of bringing some dancers in for some of the pieces.
Yeah, movement. I think I always say that movement on stage is beautiful. There were some moments in Charlie's Aunt that didn't make the final cut, if you will, that I wanted, because I love it when things fly through the air on stage. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but if somebody on one side of the stage throws something to somebody else, I love that idea of the audience watching it go through the air and going, please God, let them catch it.
The business,
That kind of business. And the other thing I really love on stage is any of the elements, fire, water, those kind of things, because they're immediate, they're visceral. People can see them, and I like that. And I this is a show that is prime for those kind of the usage of elements,
absolutely,
if you will. Even the slightest thing, the light of a match. I mean, Romeo and Juliet, that's how that production started.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But lighting a cigarette? Or
Lighting a lantern.
A lantern. Okay.
I
didn't know if he modernized it. Did he?
It was set somewhere around the 30s in Italy, and I started the show as Friar Lawrence in the tomb. So I did the two households, both alike in dignity, but it started the lights bumped up on the strike of a match as I lit the lantern in the tomb over their bodies, and that's it. Then it pulls away, they disappear, the show, and then there was an audio sound of snippets from the show that then opened up into the first scene of the show. It was Ira the Fourth did a great job stepping up to the plate. I mean, come on, you're 24 years old. The first show you're going to direct is Romeo and Juliet, starring your sister and your dad.
That's pretty weird.
And it's huge.
Yes.
It's
crazy.
But, you know, the visuals that he used and the elements, if you will, that we put on stage helped the audience really identify. I mean, it draws you in. I love minimalist theater.
So do I.
You know, I very do like so. That, but there's a place where other, you know, more, hey, there's an oven on stage that works, is important as well.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, it was minimal. We had props, we had set pieces, but we didn't, I wouldn't say it was overly designed, if you will.
Yes,
and
yes.
And I think that's a challenge with something like Seafarers, because I think some people would want to overly design it. You know,
and I think the mere suggestion of a sail here, a bar there, a stool there, a chest in the background, fishing crates or whatever, just sort of strewn across the stage to where you don't actually have to change scenes and redesign the stage. You just go to different locales and perform from there.
Yeah, I'm one of those people, as I've aged, I don't like blackouts in theater as much as, you know, when I was in high school, and I go back to high school because that's when all the bad theater was done in my world. I shouldn't speak too soon.
About that.
I've done
we've
some
got a ways
since
to go
then.
Yet. You know,
but you know, I think back on it, and we were doing like Fiddler on the Roof or whatever, and the blackouts were as long as the scenes were, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
And audiences, because of the way society is now, their attention span is not real long. And if there's a blackout is not necessary, I want to avoid it at all costs, because otherwise what you're doing is saying, okay, stop. Okay, audience, relax for a second, lean back in your seat. Oh, now re-engage in the story.
We'll be right back.
A mini intermission, as it were.
And I think that the more blackouts you have that aren't necessary in shows sometimes are just kind of do that. They take the audience out of it for that second or
so
two.
So what's your preference then, just lighting changes?
I like a shift, a transitional shift or whatever. I'm not opposed to the audience actually seeing some of the scene changes.
Yeah, that's.
You know
I think it's that's better than just having it black. In most cases, I think of course it's appropriate sometimes.
Yeah, one of my instructors in college, and someone I learned a great deal about theater from, Paul Ferguson, who's on the faculty at UNC, amazing man. One of the things he always said was, if you want something invisible, make it visible. And basically the idea was that
Brechtian.
Yeah, if you just do it. Just if you want the scene change to happen, let it happen. Incorporate it as part of the production.
Absolutely.
And the audience, they accept it as the vocabulary, if you will, of the show.
Or the turning of the page, so
to speak. But when you black out, the audience, because we've always been taught, they just kind of sit back and they wait and they go, okay, now. And then you open the book again when the lights come
back up. Okay, now audience, you can start feeling again.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Stop.
Okay, no more feeling for a few minutes while we do the scene change.
Or the girlfriend gets up and goes, move your hand now.
it's judicious. The judicious use of that is wonderful. A blackout in a show can really punctuate something.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And in something like Seafarers or another show, if you've got a piece that deserves that moment of reflection.
Actually, I, I do the opening in absolute darkness where all they hear is my voice, but all the lights go out. The audience is sitting in the dark.
And they're like, where are we? Where are we? Yeah, right. But I think that it pauses, same thing. Mm-hmm. I told this with Charlie's Aunt people. I said, earn your pauses.
Yeah.
Earn them. If every line is line, pause, line, but the audience goes, please get us out of here. But if you earn those pauses, when you hit them, oh, the payoff.
Which was the strength of actors you were talking about, Alec Guinness, Richard Burton, Richard Harris. That was their whole dynamic, really.
It's knowing timing. And that's something David has taught me in years of working with David, is timing. And the secret to comedy really is timing, folks.
Absolutely.
And what we can do is find the rhythm. You've got to find that rhythm of the piece, whatever it is, whether it's a drama or a comedy. And once you find that rhythm, you can ride that rhythm, and it helps you tell the story. It supports you. You're just on the waves, if you will.
You're riding the crest.
You're riding it.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And I think that that's why, if there's not a need for a blackout, I don't want one.
Yeah, unless it's used, and I think it works great in a moment of suspense.
Yeah.
In a sudden moment of anger where the passion is just sort of heightened and you need something between that and the next scene. It goes out for just enough time to inhale, exhale, and boom, it's back there.
And Jerry Davis, the artistic director of Burning Coal,
whom I've had on a few times,
is a dear friend of mine. And again, somebody that I have learned a great deal about the art of theater from. He's someone who has the ability to create those transitional moments in theater in a way that are part of the piece and not, oh no, blackout, people with flashlights running around the stage. You know what I mean?
Techie time.
and I think to pick up on something, that's the beauty of theater, is you're always learning. Everybody you meet. I mean, meeting you, I've learned, I learned from you. Being around people in theater, working on different shows, you learn something. And if you're not learning...
Oh, we all learn from each other. Yeah.
If you're not learning, you're not doing...
You're not living it.
Exactly. You're just there. I'm going to show up, do my job, and go home. And this is the way I've done it. This is the way I've always done it. Boom.
And that basically substantiates boredom.
Yeah.
Ultimately, and which kills any show.
Yeah.
To not rise above that element.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing, going back to the whole thing of timing, I think the reason poetry, for the most part, has such a bad rap, and it really does in most circles. Oh. You invite me to a poetry performance, I probably won't go, even though a lot of what I write is poetry.
Yeah.
But I use poetry like Edgar Allan Poe did. Blah, 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 blah. Let me get my voice going here. To tell a story by.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like the verse for the fact that it gives you that concise rhythm to really punch that story through, not say too much and not say too little, but have it. But the whole key ingredient there is timing as well.
Oh, very much so. I mean, when we were doing Romeo and Juliet, I mean, what is Shakespeare? It's poetry.
It's poetry.
It's iambic pentameter, and it was interesting to see the actors who had a facility for verse versus the ones who it was difficult for. The verse is there to help you.
It is.
The verse is there to ride, to help you tell this story, to move it along. Shakespeare was no fool, folks.
It's almost this incredible crutch that you can lean on, because you know that this is the pace you're supposed to remain in.
And it is, and the use of the vowels, the consonants, and the way it's structured. When you hit the wave and you ride the crest, as you say, when
it
you
pulls
hit,
you along.
It, oh my God! And it's not this pretentious. A lot of people feel like Shakespeare is inaccessible because they feel it's pretentious, but it's because of the way they've seen it done.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And when people went to see one of Shakespeare's plays, they went to hear the play. They always said, "I'm going to hear a play." So the focus was on language.
Absolutely,
and I think that's the beauty of it. If you close your eyes and listen to our production of Romeo and Juliet, the story is there. It's in the words, in the way it moves. And it's timing. It's finding that and obeying it, if you will. And I think I always joke and say, I understand the rules. Now I can break them.
Yeah, exactly. You know where to break them. Yeah.
I know what works when I break them. And I think that's timing is that way too, is that if you throw that curveball to somebody, ooh, it's jarring. Because I jokingly say to the cast that if we've got the audience leaning forward, we're great.
Oh God, yeah.
Prime example, Hamlet. If and when I ever get to do that show, I'm getting a little old now. Romeo and Juliet too. You want the audience to think tonight is the night they live. tonight's the night. You want them so caught up in the story, you want them to go, oh my God, tonight is, we're going to see the happy ending. Yeah. Tonight's the night Hamlet doesn't die. Romeo and Juliet live. Oh, this is going to be the best evening of theater. Oh, God, they went. You know what I mean? but if they're leaning forward, if the play is moving timing-wise, if it's moving and the rhythm is such, the audience gets caught up in the story and forgets that they know it.
Yes.
And forgets, or even if they do know it, they're so engaged in these performances and these characters that by the end of the show, when they're dead, it is unbelievably brutal to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're crestfallen. And that's a hard thing to do.
Now, I heard that... is it Ira the third or the fourth?
Fourth, yep.
The fourth, that Ira the fourth directed this with a different ending.
We had the same ending. We had the same ending. It did end with them dead. There was a...
But they went into the surreal realms.
There was, at one point, there was a video that we had shot that they did use, but it actually did not make the final cut. We did it one night and went back. It was a great.
You did it in front of an audience.
Did it in front of an audience one night.
Dress rehearsal. When was it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was our preview night.
Okay.
And again, to Ira's credit, what he was able to do, or what he with the show, he had a very strong vision. And that is something beautiful at 24 years old to know what you want, and then also to be able to listen to the feedback from some people and say, you know what, you're right, and take an element away, even though it was something you felt strongly about. You know what I mean? And they filmed it. It was wonderful. But I think he ultimately came to the decision that the show is stronger and more powerful with the ending that we went with ultimately.
The one we're used to, essentially. I heard that. He basically went into the realm beyond death.
Beyond
with
death.
Them.
Yeah, they were dancing in some ethereal area, which was, and it was beautiful. I mean, Evan is stunning, and Kyle, the guy who played Romeo, they're two beautiful people. You put them in beautiful clothes, and there's no question audiences will love it. But I think
was there a change of wardrobe in the ethereal realm?
They were wearing a tuxedo and beautiful clothes. Yes.
Oh, they dressed up. Okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's what happens to me.
Yeah, right.
but I think that is a director's gift is to see something and then realize, okay, I know I wanted it and I was committed to it, but
now seeing it,
now I know that it doesn't work how I wanted it to work. And
an artist mixing colors on the palette.
Exactly. And there are a lot of things that have to happen when you hit an audience. I mean, when a show opens in New York, it's been in previews for a long time, and if it's a new piece, heck, any show, they're probably adjusting things as they go, so that when they open, they then have a quote unquote final piece. And I think that was we had not had an audience up to that point, really. So now you put it before an audience, you try something and it doesn't work, and you drop back and you adjust.
The beauty of something like that too is sometimes that kind of controversy can really stimulate something that does work, if in fact it does. But then you very quickly realize
it's truly the collaboration of theater. I mean, is I've worked with many directors as an actor who come in with a very strong concept and it doesn't jive with what I as an actor might have thought, and my job as an actor is to advocate for what I think is right. You know, in a lot of ways,
sure.
And the best directors are the ones that help me kind of merge those two together. Or I would say some of the best directors I've ever worked with are the directors that nurture you and nudge you into the performance that they want, but they make you think you did it.
That sounds like Ira David Wood III.
And Glenn Matthews, the artistic director at REP, and Jerry Davis, all of them have this ability.
Mm-hmm.
The great directors have this ability to look at you and go, Claudio, think about it this way. And you do, and you start making the choices that they're nudging you towards, and you're discovering the choices, but they had discovered them 2 weeks ago.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
You know what I mean?
How marvelous of you to think that you did this. Yes.
But that's why art is so collaborative. And I think at the end of Romeo and Juliet, that's what happened.
Yeah, I was, because when I first heard that, I was trying to identify with that aspect in my head, and it didn't seem to me, just mentally running it through my head, I've seen it and worked it so many times, that would work. But I was curious as to whether it would take.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, Romeo and Juliet is not a small piece. And, you know, come on, and everybody knows it. I always joke and say that when you know, when Hamlet comes out on stage and starts to be or not to be there, if it's a full house, everybody's mouthing it with him.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
We all know it. And that's a blessing
it's
and
like
a curse.
It's like Casablanca, yeah.
Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse. I've seen some Hamlets that were awful, and I've seen some Hamlets that were amazing. One of the Hamlets that I regret I missed was Simon Russell Beale, big British actor, kind of stocky like me. Mm. And his performance, they say, was one of the best Hamlets of the last 25-50 years.
I'm not familiar with that either.
He's a great actor, but he's, you know, he's barrel-chested and stocky. And mm-hmm. I thought, wow, here's not the brooding emo Hamlet. And they've created, you know, they've got a guy who is just... has a low center of gravity, if you will.
as it were, yes.
And that was running when we were in London on our honeymoon, and we did not see that. We instead saw some other new musical, which was awful.
Just to let you folks out there know, you're listening to Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. We're in the studio here with David Henderson, director, actor, and probably many other creative aspects to you. And my co-host, John Paul.
Yo,
this be the speakeasy coming at you, and we're still talking to David. Now, David, you're getting ready to go back into Christmas Carol stuff.
Yes, correct.
Give us a little scoop on what's happening there.
We are taking Christmas Carol to Compiègne, France.
Yes.
We will be there.
I would love to go along, just can't afford it.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Wouldn't you love to just fly along?
We will be heading to Compiègne the week of Thanksgiving, and we will do a concert version, I believe, of the show. There, an hour and a half long, no
explain
intermission.
Explain concert version.
In the sense that it won't be the fully... we're not traveling with the full sets.
Oh, I see.
And
I see,
props
okay.
and everything. We'll do that, and then we'll come back to Raleigh and do the annual run downtown in Memorial.
And Compiègne is, of course, considered the sister city of Raleigh,
It is the
right?
sister city of Raleigh, and I'm going to get this wrong, but I believe it's the 20th anniversary of the relationship between Raleigh and Compiègne. That may be absolutely wrong. I may have just made that number.
I know David brought that up when
I had him. Well, if you did make it up, it sure sounds good.
It sounded good until I just questioned
it. Yes.
But I they went before, you know, and I think it's the anniversary of the trip, the last trip. And there's this year-long, I believe, celebration in Compiègne celebrating their sister cities because they mm-hmm. have multiple sister cities. Apparently, they're... Again, I'm vaguely remembering this. I think they had at one point the Guinness record for the number of sister cities, and they take it very, very, very seriously, their relationship. And it's an opportunity for us to go back. For me, it's 40 minutes outside of Paris, so I can go awesome. To the Louvre and all these things that I've never seen.
Go have some coffee on the Eiffel Tower just to have done it.
And but we will start rehearsals for that in a month.
In a month coming
Yeah,
up.
We will start that in August, I believe. And then the full cast, obviously, because it's not the full cast going to France. There is a skeletal, if you will, crew of people going to do the show in France. Mm-hmm. And then we'll come back to Raleigh, gather the troops, and attack again. And
start at Memorial. Or are you starting again at the
No,
new...
we're doing it in Raleigh, not in Durham this year.
Not in Durham this year. Not at all in Durham?
Okay. Not at all. Yeah, and that's we had a blast last year in Durham. It's such a beautiful theater and such an amazing place. Raleigh's home, and it's great. You know, you walk on that stage in Memorial Auditorium. Look, I do shows throughout the year in theaters that seat, you know, 150 people max. Mm-hmm. And some nights I perform for 10 people, which is a little humbling as an artist. but then yes. once a year I get to go walk down to Memorial Auditorium and walk out on stage to 2,200 people, 2,300 people, or whatever.
Consistently.
You know, and that's a gift. And it's something Absolutely. Nice to do as an actor to go in front of 2,200 people and tell this story. And the success of the show, 35 years running,
it's amazing.
Has been that David has brilliantly taken this classic and made it so immediate and accessible to people.
The humor is always current to the political situation, whatever.
And just like the old cartoons we all used to watch, it has something for the adults.
Yes.
Or it has something for everyone. The adults get it on a different level than kids do.
Absolutely.
But the core of the story, the change of this man is still there to the point that at the end of the show, people are crying. David always tells stories about looking out and seeing family, you know, father reaching over and holding his son, and it's beautiful. The lullaby that Bob Cratchit sings to Tiny Tim is a moment. I love that moment, and I liked it, but I didn't love it until I was a father. Because when I was 25 years old, we recorded the CD of the show, and it was 2 or 3 in the morning when they were recording Bob Cratchit's Lullaby, and the guy who was playing Bob Cratchit that year couldn't really sing. And it's 2 in the morning. I'm standing outside of the recording studio off of Capitol Boulevard. I'm smoking cigarettes. I've probably been smoking all day. I don't smoke anymore. But David comes out and says, I need you to come in and sing this. So I went in, and I sang on the cast recording for Christmas Carol, the lullaby for Bob Cratchit. And I sang it. I could act it. I knew it. I knew the music. And it was wonderful. But now as a father... I don't know if I could make it through the song. You know, so I think that...
The emotional, yeah.
For me, I've done the show for 15 years, and it's been a gift for me because I've grown with it, and my relationship with the material has changed.
But I think that's an aspect, too, that the audience is hard-pressed to appreciate, because as much as the actors are moving the audience, they themselves have to be moved by the work in the first place to generate that.
Yeah, correct. You have to live in that moment.
So I can well imagine that it would sweep you off your feet in that sense.
Yeah, some nights are harder than David. Some nights are harder than others because you do 2 shows in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You're exhausted.
Yeah.
You are wiped out. And David is on stage for now about 2 hours and 2.5 hours. He holds that show together, and I'm amazed. It's really a treat to watch him do and to be a part of.
Absolutely.
I just was able to find the confirmation of what you were saying about the Sister City.
Oh, good.
It is a 20-year anniversary of the bonding of the cities. And Mayor Meeker started out the city council meeting in November, the first of the series, I guess, announcing that this was the year of Compaign in Raleigh.
Good.
Honoring the 90th anniversary of the signing of the armistice ending World War I, which took place in Compaign. Yep.
As a matter of fact, I remember David pointing to that.
Yeah,
when he was here.
And that David just got back. They went over and did a pre trip. And I went over, and he was showing me some of the video footage that he had shot. And he went to Normandy. His uncle is buried there.
And it's
beautiful. And I hope that I get to see that just to be, you know, taken aback.
Absolutely.
By it. You know what I mean? It's an amazing thing. So it's going to be a wonderful time, I think, for anybody that goes, and for the relationship between the two cities. And it takes Christmas Carol International, and the story is international, if you will, in that the change from the grump to the
absolutely,
you know, and I think that's why it doesn't matter that we do it in English.
It's a premise that'll never die.
No, and to see it is, having seen it for 15 years, it's a real joy, and it's solidified my friendship with David on and off stage. I mean, I love him like a brother, and an older brother.
Indeed.
But I think that that those bonds forged in the trenches of theater, if you will, last a long time, and it's hard to get away from.
And David has certainly earned himself a great place in just theater overall. But for what he's brought and what he's given, what he's accomplished, he's earned his medal.
Yeah, he has. If you look back in the 70s, what they were doing at Theater in the Park, I mean, when I graduated from Carolina...
That's when I first joined forces out there.
In the 90s, when I graduated, you could count the number of theaters on one hand, pretty much. And in the last, 10, 15 years, they've grown so much. I mean, Durham, you know, Little Green Pig over in Durham, they do amazing work. Man Bites Dog Theater, amazing work.
Very true.
There are theaters all over the Triangle that are doing brilliant, brilliant work, and that helps everybody. The more great art that's being produced, more people go.
In very many ways, that Theater in the Park and under Ira David Wood was a launchpin for a lot
exactly.
of this.
Exactly.
Even my production in 88 of Seafarers was an independent production, and not very many places were putting on independent.
Correct. And now, you know, there's a place over in Durham, Common Ground Theater, and a lot of shows work that do stuff there because it's a space that they rent out to do stuff. And that's the hardest thing, is getting your own space. Burning Coal, we've had our space now. January of this year was our 1 year anniversary of being in that space, and having that space has been amazing.
I have yet to see that space.
We had Jerry on here
Need to bring him on again.
When that was being, when that was going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And still, we haven't gotten over there to look at it.
I know.
Yeah, I'll be doing a show with them in the spring, winter spring time frame.
Okay.
Called Seafarers, the Seafarer. How ironic.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's but it's a Connor McPherson play. It's an Irish play, and I won't tell you anything about it because it's it'll give away the plot. But it's a wonderful, wonderful piece.
Is it a one man show?
No, it's I think there are five or six men in the show, and it takes place on Christmas. Christmas Eve, it's a wonderful show.
I'll have to come see that, especially since it's maritime.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful piece. But again, all theaters, when you have a home, you have a place for people to come. It's harder if you're itinerant, but theater companies are doing it. People are coming to see shows. They're finding it wherever they can. And I think
You made an interesting point earlier today when you mentioned that you'd like to see this place take on some of the gravitas of places like New York and Chicago.
Yeah.
And I think really in many ways this area is already respected for the arts. Mm-hmm. It's referred to as the state of the arts for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think that door's opening more and more.
It is. More people, you find more and more people relocating here from other places who are artists. I have friends who are in New York who are coming back. I have friends in LA mm-hmm. who are actors that are coming back, directors. They're gravitating towards here because there's a quality of life here, I think, that artists get. Because I lived in New York and I love New York. I lived in LA and love is a strong word. I tolerated LA.
Yes.
But I think what I missed was living here. And I grew up in the South. I grew up, grew up telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And as an artist, all I need to do to tell a story is a place to tell it. And if I could tell it at home, I was happy. You know, it's not about fame and fortune. Fortune would be great, but it is nice to be able to do what I love in an area that I love and with people that I love and not have to worry.
Theater is the temple of the story.
Mm-hmm.
However, and to me, I see it as a truer temple than I see the church, personally.
Yeah, it is a church. I mean, it is a spiritual...
It transforms you by really putting you there instead mm-hmm. of just theoretically taking you somewhere.
Yeah,
I think we're getting close to the end of our run here, are we, John Paul?
We've got a minute or so before we want to start the ending music.
And, of course, John Paul's show comes on right after this. I keep wanting to call it Truth or Consequences, but it's actually John Paul's Truth and Variety Hour.
There are consequences to the truth. Show? Well, I've had musicians on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to have more on, and we're going to be doing some jamming also in the future with playing live right here in the studio with different players who I know from all over the place. Mostly, of course, I talk about the lies that you get from the mainstream media, and I try to find the correct information and impart that to the listeners because the mainstream media is really just a huge propaganda machine, which does nothing but try to condition people to think a certain way. And in order to fight that, you've got to be very interested in it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And
so that's what's coming up next, folks.
Yeah.
And I think we're winding it down with David Henderson, whom we've had the pleasure of the hour with.
Thank you very much.
And again, my hat's off to you for Charlie's Aunt.
Thank you.
I certainly want to know about anything else you direct, and I hope it's going to be Seafarers.
That sounds possible.
Giving John Paul and me a job there.
We would love to do that.
Be fun to do that. It's about time to put that back on the map again.
Yeah,
I think so.
It stands on its own legs once it's gets some.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, you'll have to come back again right away next time you get a chance.
Well, he's part of the Speakeasy family at this point. This is not his first time on.
Indeed. It'll be so much fun.
Thank you.
So thanks for being on, David.
Thank you, Claudio.
Thank you, everybody out there, for tuning us in. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. All else? Boy, my language is bouncing around in my chest today.
Yeah, easy for you to say.
Yeah, right. Anyway, thanks for tuning us in. Until next time, cheers.
This is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me, and I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky. And the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with the song of my heart, and the song of my heart with the voice of my soul. Adrift, 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 drifting ever back.